Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you for hanging on. I know sometimes 2 hours is a lot to listen to, but I think we did pretty good. We had a couple of people couldn't come in on the first hour, but we just pulled it audible, and we got to Mark, Tommy, and Sam Dixon were so gracious about coming in. I thought they did a marvelous job. I mean, I don't know how anyone could not like listening to Sam Dixon. The guy's so eloquent. And so fluid in his speech, and he knows what the hell he's talking about. He's the epitome of a Southern gentleman. Anyway, I thought we had a good second hour too with Paul Fromm. He's always knowledgeable. He really is. And now we have the highlight of the show, the still bitter, more bitter than ever, bitter ender coming on. One of these days, well, I guess I'm thinking out loud. I wish we could start from the very beginning and then record everything Gene does, because one of these days, me and Gene won't be here. We won't be able to do this every Saturday, and we need to do it. I wish with some way we could have some kind of a library we could put it in for our posterity. I guess I got that name right. Anyway, go ahead, Bitter Ender. Let us know what we're going to be doing tonight. I know it's going to be great. I know it's going to be solid gold.
Thank you, Eddie, for allowing us to have our Confederate Hour on Blood River Radio. I'm going to kind of pick up and cover a few things that we didn't get in last week. Last week we were talking about in February, since it was February that this took place, the formation of the Confederate government in Montgomery, Alabama, after seven states voted to leave the Union, as it was legally their right to do. And I don't know if I'm getting all fired up. Maybe I'm not a real good American, but I'm not getting all fired up in this 250th anniversary whoop-de-doo. About the signing of the Declaration. You know, that was an ordinance of secession. It was a secession from the British government. And a colony really didn't have a right to do that. We just decided we would. And we're all upset about a 1% tax. And now that, you know, that looks like microscopic tax, what we get levied on us by the federal government. So the South, when it came along that the election of Lincoln and the Radical Republicans have totally departed from our Constitution and had no respect for that at all, they said, look, this is not what we signed on for. We joined voluntarily and we're leaving voluntarily. And then Lincoln said they couldn't, not because of slavery, but because of money. And he even said it wasn't about slavery. It's about the Southern states paying their tariff. So anyway, that was one of the things we covered. And Lincoln admitted that he needed a war, and he had to goad the South into firing the first shot and get all the anti-South and the war sentiment stirred up in the North and have parades and wave the flag and do all of this stuff to get the Northern population behind a war against the South. So the plan was to move the federal troops out of Fort Moultrie on the northern side of Charleston Harbor out to a fort that was under construction right at the entrance to Charleston Harbor in the main channel coming in there at Fort Sumter. There weren't any federal troops in there. There was a construction crew and a lighthouse keeper, but that was about it. So he had the federal troops moved out of Fort Moultrie out to Fort Sumter, which effectively blocked the Charleston Harbor, any ships coming in there. And Lincoln said, now the southern states that have voted to leave the Union can stay out of the Union. They can keep their slaves, which they thought was a big issue. It wasn't to us, as long as they pay their taxes to the United States government. And we're going, oh, wait a minute. So we have to pay taxes to a foreign government? AB, I don't think that's going to fly.
No way, Jose.
I've thrown that in people's face today talking about it. And I said, all right, yeah, but the South fired on Fort Sumter. Okay, what would happen if Iran, since looks like we're getting into another war that we weren't supposed to get into. Iran or Russia or Communist China put a missile battery at the Verrazano Narrows coming into New York Harbor and said, yes, ships could dock in New York, but they had to stop and pay a tax to Russia or Communist China or Iran. How long do you think that would last? We would say, okay, that's okay. We'll pay taxes. Anyway, so that was the situation. And There was a British historian that wrote about this that said about the South firing the first shot. He said, the aggressor in a war is not necessarily the one who fires the first shot, but the aggressor in a war is the one who causes the first shot to be fired. And that's exactly what happened in Charleston. In fact, there were two forts that were not abandoned deliberately in the South. One was Fort Sumter in Charleston Harbor. The other one was Fort Pickens in Pensacola Harbor. And Pensacola wasn't as big or as important a harbor or a port to the South as Pensacola was, so it was kind of ignored. So that was the one that really caused the conflict. And the South had sent three delegates to the North to try to negotiate some kind of peace settlement about these forts that were still being occupied in the South by the U.S. military. And Lincoln refused to meet with them because he said the South wasn't a real country, that the nation was here before the Constitution, which is a lie. And so you couldn't leave once you were in the United States. So that's really a good country you want to be a part of. It won't let you leave. So he wouldn't meet with him. He turned him over to his Secretary of State, William Seward, and Seward lied and stalled and said, well, come back next week, and I think we can get something worked out. Well, next week came along, and, oh, the president's busy. Could you come back next Friday? Okay, all right, they came back. Nothing happened. So then they came up with this lie that the federal troops at Fort Sumter were being starved out, and they weren't. Every day they'd send a boat up the harbor in Charleston to the market and get supplies and come back out to Fort Sumter. They did stop it when they found out that they were being lied to and this fleet was being put together in New York to be sent to Charleston. And they were hoping that this fleet would be fired on. In fact, they even joked about it in the North and called it the termite fleet because there were a bunch of old ships that were eaten up with termites, and they were actually hoping that there would be fired upon, which would be the excuse that Lincoln needed to declare war against the Southern states. So that's why they were sending that fleet down there. So we talked about some of the positions on the cabinet that were made in the Confederate government. One of the people that Jefferson Davis asked to serve on his cabinet was Stephen Mallory of Florida, who had been a senator in the United States Senate and head of the Department on Naval Affairs. And he was given the unenviable task of building a navy from nothing. The South had no warships. They had some old steamers that they'd convert to ironclads. The one that we've all heard about was the CSS Virginia, was built over the hull of the old USS Merrimack that was burned and sunk in the Gosport Navy Yard in Norfolk when the U.S. Navy abandoned that, and they turned that into an ironclad ship. But Stephen Mallory and the Confederate States Navy did a pretty decent job when you look at it. If you look at the number of ships that were sunk by the Confederate surface Navy and by their coastal forts, which most of those guns were manned by Navy gunners or Confederate Marine gunners, or the Confederate Torpedo Department under Gabriel Rains, which is all under the Navy, or the Confederate, and including the Confederate Submarine Service, the Hunley, which is the first submarine to sink an enemy warship, the Confederate Navy sank more U.S. warships than the total history of the United States Navy from 1775 up until the morning of December 7, 1941. So the Japanese sank more U.S. warships than the Confederates did, but for that time period from 1775 to December 7, 1941, the Confederate Navy sank more U.S. warships in those 4 years than all the other years put together. So they did a pretty good job. And so Gabriel Rains had the Confederate Torpedo Department, and they were the ones that sank most of the U.S. warships. We call them mines today, but they called them torpedoes back then. And they even came up with electrically detonated mines. They would use a battery and copper cables running out to this explosive device floating in a river or harbor, and they'd have a stick on it. And when the ship would bump that stick over and knock it over like it was driftwood, they'd touch those two wires together, and boom, there it went. That's where they sank the USS Cairo in the Yazoo River up north of Vicksburg.
Wow, so, they had batteries in those days? I didn't know they had batteries up there.
Well, it was a chemical in a glass jar, and it would cause some kind of electric current. And I'm not that
much of a scientist
that I can explain that to you, but they did use that. And then his brother George Rains was in charge of the Augusta Powder Works in Augusta, Georgia, and they came up with a bunch of inventive ideas. They created the highest grade of gunpowder in the world from the Augusta Powder Works and shipped it all over the South. So the South never lost a battle because they ran out of gunpowder ammunition. They just ran out of the number of people and food and so forth. But, yeah, that was the Augusta Powder Works and really some modern inventions in that. Wow. So we will continue after the break and get into some more of this information, and then we have another piece of information from Paul Craig Roberts I'd like to read to our listeners.
I never knew they had batteries in those days, so you've educated me again, as usual, Bitter Ender. Be right back, folks.
Experience the untamed spirit of the American West with Range Magazine. Each issue is a visual journey featuring award-winning photography and compelling stories that capture the heart of ranching and rural life. Stay informed on the challenges and triumphs of those who live and work on the land. Subscribe today and receive quarterly editions delivered to your doorstep, and join a community that cherishes the enduring legacy of the Western frontier. Visit rangemagazine.com to subscribe.
During our war for Southern independence, the brilliant Confederate general Robert E. Lee foretold the decline of this country when he prophesied, if those people, referring to the dictatorial federal government, if those people win this war, the United States will become a bully abroad and a tyrant at home. As Lee predicted, it has come to pass. The principles laid out in our founding documents, our Declaration of Independence, and the individual rights protected in our Constitution have been vilified and discarded. But not everyone has surrendered. Blood River Radio brings you highly respected, intelligent guests not afraid to speak the truth when the truth in America today is censored and attacked. Your contributions keep us on the air in order to fight against the bullies abroad and the tyrants at home. Send your war contributions to Blood River Radio, P.O. Box 34636, Bartlett, Tennessee 38184. That address is on our website, www.bloodriverradio.com. Don't let the bullies and the tyrants win.
Are you ready to stand up for your community and support your local sheriff? Join the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association and become a vital member of the Sheriff's Citizens Posse. At CSPOA.org, we empower citizens like you through weekly webinars, arming you with the knowledge to back your constitutional county sheriff. Together, we can uphold our Constitution and ensure liberty and justice for all. Your community needs you now more than ever.
Let me tell you something, boy, if I did give you power, you got nothing. Nobody gives you power. Real power is something you take.
You hear Blood River Radio family, when he's old Jock Ewing, he's damn right. Real power you have to take, and we're taking the power. That's why we're going to preach Confederate history come hell or high water. Go ahead, Bitter Ender. Go back where you was, brother.
We were talking about what actually started the war for Southern independence that some people mischaracterize and call it a civil war. I won't get that straight right now. If you look up Civil War dictionary in the dictionary, it says it's a war between two factions within a country. Well, that's wrong. The United States invaded another country, the sovereign country of the Confederate States of America. And then the second part of that definition is for the control of the government of that country. Well, the South never wanted to take control of the government of the United States. They said, look, you elected Abraham Lincoln. You got him. You keep him. We're out of here. We don't want any part of that government. So anyway, that being said, so the fleet that was sent from New York to invade the harbor at Charleston to try to create an incident, to Lincoln's excuse to start a war, they knew it was coming. The Confederate delegation had gone out to Fort Sumter time and time again and asked if they'd just abandon the fort and not use it as a excuse to start a war. And they were under orders from Lincoln. They couldn't. About 2 a.m. on the 12th of April, the last delegation rode out to Fort Sumter and met with Major Anderson, who was the U.S. Army commander in Fort Sumter, ask him if he could please abandon the fort and avoid a war, because they knew that's what Lincoln wanted. And he said no, he was ordered to stay there. And they said, all right, if we don't fire on Fort Sumter, but we just fire on the fleet, would you return fire? And he said, yes, I've been ordered to do that. So that was the last attempt at trying to stop a war between the United States and the Confederate States. So at 4 a.m. on April the 12th, the Confederate guns around Charleston opened fire on Fort Sumter. And the fleet stayed out of range. They saw what was going on. They said, no way, we're going in there. But that's what Lincoln needed, because the flag had been fired on. There were no casualties in the fort until the next day. They decided to surrender. There were several fires burning in there that they couldn't get them all put out. So they asked the defenses at Charleston if they could fire a 21-gun salute to the U.S. flag. And they said, of course, that's fine. Go ahead. During this 21-gun salute, one of their cannons exploded and killed two of the federal soldiers and wounded several others. So that was all the excuse that Lincoln needed, that U.S. soldiers had been killed by these horrible Southerners and the flag had been fired on. So then Lincoln sent a call to all the states that were still in the Union to supply their militia, their troops, to force the seven states back into the Union. Now, people say, well, the other six states that left and joined the Union left when Fort Sumter was fired up. No, they didn't leave then. They left when Lincoln called for an army to invade the other states. And most of the governors sent some kind of letter to Lincoln telling him there's no way we're going to invade fellow states in the Union. Governor Isom G. Harris of Tennessee wrote a letter to Lincoln, and he said, Tennessee will not furnish one single man for coercion, but 50,000 if necessary to defend our rights and those of our fellow southern states. And he had 75 written in there, and he crossed it out and put 50. He thought 75 was a little over the top. He should have left it because before the end of the war, the state of Tennessee furnished over 132,000 men to the Confederate armies. So anyway, that's what brought the other six states out of the Union. So we had Arkansas, we had Tennessee, we had North Carolina, Virginia, and later on, Kentucky and Missouri also passed an ordinance of secession, although they don't really count them a lot of times because their governments were a government in exile. Their states had already been invaded by the imperial empire of Lincoln. And so the real government that had been elected by the people had to flee from the capital in Missouri and also at Frankfort in Kentucky, and they then issued that ordinance of secession. So that's where the 13 states came from. Now, the Confederacy decided that they were going to move the capital from Montgomery, Alabama, up to Richmond. Virginia had the largest population of any state in the South. Richmond had military arsenals, flour mills, textile mills, and so the government was moved to Richmond, Virginia. It's kind of a political move. Really, it was a bad, bad military move because it put the Confederate capital within 90 miles of the enemy's capital in Washington. And all the emphasis by the Confederate government was defending the capital at Richmond and in the Eastern Theater of the War, and they let the Western Theater of the War, which was west of the Appalachian Mountains to the Mississippi River, and then the Trans-Mississippi, which is on the other side of the Mississippi, they kind of let that go. And a lot of the war materials and the recruits and so forth went to the Army in Virginia to defend the capital of Richmond, whereas if it had stayed in Montgomery, they would have had a long way to cover to get to the Confederate capital. The U.S. Army would have, and they would have long, long supply lines that would be vulnerable to attack. And this is where I think Bedford Forrest really had the correct concept on how to fight the war. He knew that the Confederacy could not win a conventional war against the United States. We were outnumbered. They had 21 million people. We only had 9 million. And 3 million of those 9 were black slaves. So, and plus they had ports that were open throughout the whole war. They could bring in huge numbers of Irish and German immigrants to fill up the ranks when the Northern boys said, you know, we're not re-enlisted. Jesus Christ, those rebels can shoot, and they can shoot straight down there. So they couldn't get them to re-up, so they had to bring in European immigrants to fill up the ranks. So Forrest knew we couldn't win a conventional war, so his strategy was to attack their supply lines, swing around behind these major armies, tear up the railroad, destroy their supply depots, cut telegraph lines, make them fight, you know, in 360 degrees around wherever the army was, and just drag the war on until he got tired of it. And that's what Forrest did. And Forrest defeated Grant, Sherman, William Rosecrans and Don Carlos Buell. They were the four Union commanders that fought in the Western Theater of the War. He calls all four of them to stop their campaigns and turn around to their main city and base of supplies, and he never fought any one of them head-to-head. So he had the correct concept, but the government in Richmond couldn't quite figure that out because he wasn't a West Point graduate, and, you know, what did he know about it? But anyway, that's kind of off our track today. So that was our organization of the Confederate government and why it was moved from Montgomery up to Richmond and why militarily I don't think that was a really good idea. And there's several other real historians have said the same thing. It put it too close to the enemy's capital, and it put it on the emphasis on everything in the Eastern Theater. But President Davis and the War Department kept believing that Lee and the Army of Northern Virginia could win a decisive victory over the Union Army of the Potomac, destroy the Union Army, and march on Washington, D.C., threaten Washington, and then win our independence. And Lee did. I mean, he defeated, you know, Ambrose P. Burnside and Fighting Joe Hooker and McClellan and John Pope and all of these generals, Union generals in the Army. But he never could get such a decisive victory that the Federal Army was destroyed and run all the way back to Washington, where the Confederates could come up on Arlington Heights there and lob artillery shells at the White House and the Capitol and the War Department and get the U.S. government to concede that the South should have its independence, because it looked like they were getting ready to come across the Potomac and just like the British had done, burn Washington, D.C. So that never happened, and we pay for it today by being forced at gunpoint to be part of our enemy's country. And a lot of people don't like that saying that, but that's true. You know, we said that last week, if the United States of America was such a great country, why did a fourth of the people have to be forced at gunpoint to be a part of it? But anyway, that's another argument for another time. So that was our history of our government, how it started and where it went and what happened to it. And, you know, technically, the Confederate States of America never surrendered. Now, armies did. Lee surrendered at Appomattox and Joe Johnston, the Army of Tennessee, at Durham Station in North Carolina, and then various units. Forrest never surrendered, but his department was surrendered, and he was under the Department of Mississippi, Alabama, and Eastern Louisiana. So technically, he was surrendered with the rest of the department. And then various units out in the Trans-Mississippi Department were also surrendered, but the government itself never surrendered. They captured Jefferson Davis down in Georgia. He was trying to get away and get across the Mississippi and continue the war out west, hopefully that the U.S. would get tired of it and just grant the South its independence, but not enough was going on. So they were holding him in the dungeon at Fort Monroe there in the Chesapeake Bay. And they were hoping there's some way he would die, and they tortured him and kept the light on in his cell and had a guard tramping up and down outside and hoping he would just have a mental breakdown or die from in there. And they were going to put him on trial for treason and execute him. But the chief of the Supreme Court, Chief Justice Taney, told him, said, "You don't want to have a trial with Jefferson Davis on trial, because you cannot prove that secession was illegal. And if you can't prove it was legal, how can you have this man executed?" And he said, what you would do in a trial, you can't prove that secession was illegal. So basically, he said, what happened was you fought a war for 4 years that cost the lives of nearly 700,000 Americans for something that was not illegal. And it should have been left alone. So they couldn't do anything with Davis, and they even tried several crooked deals to try to get him executed. One was with Major, the commandant at Andersonville Prison, and we'll talk about that right after the break. This is another dirty deal that
yes, sir. I'll make a comment. You're doing a great job. I'm gonna make a comment when we come back. Be right back, okay, folks.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Breaking news this hour from Town Hall. I'm Mary Rose. President Trump says Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei has been killed in a major attack on Iran launched by Israel and the U.S. He called it the single greatest chance for the Iranian people to take back their country. Key members of Congress want to restrain President Trump's military attack on Iran.
Democrats and some Republicans in Congress are demanding a vote on a war powers resolution that would require President Donald Trump to win the approval of Congress for any further action in Iran. The leader of the Senate's bipartisan effort, Democrat Tim Kaine of Virginia, says, has President Trump learned nothing from decades of U.S. meddling in Iran and forever wars in the Middle East? Republican Lindsey Graham is calling the strikes on Iran a historic operation and says, well done, Mr. President. Donna Warder, Washington.
More arrests over the Minnesota church protest that led to charges against Don Lemon.
30 additional people are being charged over the January 18th anti-ICE protest at a St. Paul, Minnesota church that led to the arrests of Don Lemon, Georgia Fort, and local activists. U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi announced that most of the protesters were already in custody. 39 people now face charges of conspiracy against religious freedom and interfering with the right of religious freedom. A lawyer for City's church praised the Justice Department for charging more people, saying the First Amendment does not give anyone license to storm a church and intimidate families. Protesters focused on the church after learning a pastor there is also an immigration enforcement official. I'm Jennifer King.
Michelangelo's The Last Judgment is getting a facial. The Vatican Museum's Saturday unveiled how restorers are removing a chalky white film of salt that has accumulated over the fresco since its last major renovation 3 decades ago. They're using a simple technique, Japanese rice paper dipped in distilled water.
Whether you're preparing for exams, juggling family and career, or just looking to stay sharp as you age, Think Factor is here to help. Created by the same company that makes Relief Factor, Think Factor supports sharper focus, stronger recall, and clearer thinking. It's the natural way to give your brain the daily nutrients it needs for memory, attention, and even vibrant vision. Call 800-4-RELIEF, 800-4-RELIEF, or visit ReliefFactor.com to learn more. Look, I was a little bit skeptical. I started taking Think Factor. After a few weeks, wow, my memory, my focus, my concentration, better than ever. And Think Factor results get better the longer it's taken. If you want to stay focused during demanding tasks, keep your memory strong, maintain mental energy for whatever's ahead, well, Think Factor is for you. Call 800-4-RELIEF, 800-4-RELIEF, or visit ReliefFactor.com to learn more and order Think Factor. Your first bottle is just $19.95. Think Factor. Think clearer, perform better daily. Call 800-4-RELIEF. Or visit ReliefFactor.com for Think Factor.
This is Michael Hill, Chief of the League of the South. I listen to Blood River Radio, and you should too. In fact, you should be telling your friends, your family, and your associates to listen to Eddie Miller and the good folks at Blood River Radio. They stand resolutely for the preservation of white civilization, what we once called Christendom, and they stand against the ongoing campaign of white genocide. In these trying and uncertain times, it's more important than ever to speak and act in defense of our God, our people, and our civilization. Blood River Radio speaks the truth and speaks it boldly. I've been on this show many times as a guest, and I'm very proud of my association with you. May our just cause prevail. Hail victory.
This is a battle. A battle between truth and deceit. A battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
The theepictimes.com.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning. It smells like victory.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I'd like to thank you for holding on so much. I got to share this little memorabilia I was sharing with the bitter ender. I was telling him about, you know, I'll make this quick, these memories. I'm talking about me and old James used to be out. We called, there was actually a bean field, and we actually had a run down, decrepit old radio station out there. And I was telling Gene how Art Frith, we called him the Lord of the Board. He was in the air conditioner and everything, because they had to keep the computers cool and everything. And me and James sitting out there literally broadcasting, literally in our underwear. It was so damn hot. 112, 115 degrees in this decrepit old building. And I was telling Gene about how one time this damn snake, this actually happened, a damn snake came through a hole in the ceiling down on Art Frith, who was in the air conditioning room where they kept the board. And you're talking about a hullabaloo, man. That old snake come out of there, and I'm telling you what, buddy, that kind of, we killed walls and all kind of crap like that. But I hope I didn't throw you off too bad, Gene. But I thought our people might like to hear that. That's crap actually happened. We talked about the bean field up in Tipton County. Our radio station was in the bean field right in the middle of a swamp of the Loosahatchee River bottoms. It was snakes. That place was crawling with snakes and walls, everything you can think of.
Good night.
I'm glad we don't have to put up with that now. Anyway,
some of the You survived.
Some of the good old days weren't so good. But anyway, back to you, Bitter Eater. I hope I didn't throw you off track too much, buddy.
No, that's fine. It's great to hear about the history of what you go through to try to get the truth out there. And then, like you said, you had death threats from people because they don't want the truth out.
They
so
sure
you were
going
to invite them to come out and meet Mr. Shotgun and Mr. 45.
Because we said we could use some publicity. No such thing as bad publicity. Even Sam Bushman said that. No such thing as bad publicity.
Yeah.
Get some free marketing out there.
There you go.
Anyway, hope I didn't throw you off too bad.
No, that's fine. That's great. Good to hear about that. You know, you've come a long way from the bean field and the snakes coming after you.
Sure as hell have.
What I'd like to wind up with on our last couple of segments, or segment and a half here, was an article by Paul Craig Roberts that a friend of mine sent to me. And he found this. I don't know where he found it, but he sent it to me from Dexter Nelson up in Alberta, Canada. And Dexter lives in Canada, but he's one of the most hardcore Confederates you'll find around anywhere. And so when Trump was blowing smoke and saying they wanted to make Canada the 51st state, I sent to Dexter, had a Confederate flag sticker, and I put it on about a half page of a letter and sent it to him. I said, now, if and only if the Canadians want to be the 51st state, here's my suggestion for a new flag. And it was a battle flag, and I'd painted over the center star and painted, instead of a star, a white Canadian maple leaf in there. So I said, this could be the flag for the new country.
Amen.
He thought that was pretty cool. He said, well, good. As long as we got anything to do with the Confederacy, I'm all for it. And they can't stand the Liberal government in Ottawa any more than we can stand the disaster under Biden that we had here. So I don't know why there's so many conservative people in the country, but they never get anything but some Liberal goofball to run the country. And well, it's like a lot of the states here. If you look at the map after an election, Illinois is a red state, but Cook County, Chicago, carries all the rest of the state. So all the people out in the normal people out in the small towns in Illinois have to put up with the nutcases and the black parasites in Chicago running the whole state. The same thing for New York. Anyway, okay, we'll let that go. This is an article that was written by Paul Craig Roberts that Dexter sent to me. And it starts off, it says, recently someone sent me a copy of Walter Brian Sisko's book, War Crimes Against Southern Civilians. Until I began reading this one, the Israeli Defense Force was looked upon as the ultimate in barbarism. The Israelis justify shooting mothers and babies in the head on the grounds that they grew up to be terrorists, and that the babies will grow up to be terrorists, and that the mothers will have more babies that will grow up to be terrorists. So kill the mothers and the babies before this happens. The Israelis acknowledge this, but if the Gentiles repeat it, they are dismissed as anti-Semites. Anyway, apparently historians had the same policy toward the war crimes inflicted on Southern civilians by Lincoln's army, an army of organized gang of plunderers, murderers, and rapists who make the Israeli Defense Force look like a benevolent Christian YMCA organization. He conducted war against the civilian population of the South. The Americans and the British followed it later on against Japan and Germany. And then he says, the documented accounts in Sisko's book of the war against Southern civilians are horrific. In Missouri, for example, the population was forced on the penalty of death to leave their homes, businesses, farms, and properties and be relocated in Kansas. And yeah, that was several states in the western part of Missouri. It was called the Burnt District. And the Federal Army and the Kansas Militia, the Jayhawks, just came into that part of Missouri and just absolutely cleaned it out of anybody there and burned everything in sight. And that's why William Quantrill, they talked about Quantrill was so terrible that he raided into Kansas and burned Lawrence, Kansas. But Lawrence was where most of these Jayhawkers were coming out of Kansas into Missouri and attacking the civilians in Missouri. And the thing they never tell you is that the Kansas Jayhawkers had come into Missouri and destroyed the town of Osceola in Missouri and then gone back into Kansas. They don't ever tell you that. They just say Quantrill was terrible because he burned and sacked Lawrence, Kansas, killed most of the men there. But when the Jayhawkers came into Kansas and attacked Osceola, they killed everybody, men, women, children, anybody that got in the way there. So that's how history has been doctored. This relocation and the murder of people in western Missouri was the precedent for what the Israelis have done to the Palestinians from Palestine. Now, in New Orleans, General Benjamin Butler, one of Lincoln's many incompetent and hate-filled political appointees, responded to complaints from the women's of New Orleans in Louisiana who complained about the mistreatment of fathers, husbands, sons, and brothers by declaring the women of the town plying their advocation as prostitutes. Butler's invitation to his troops to rape Southern women astounded the British prime minister, who condemned it in a speech before the British parliament. And yeah, that was what Butler did, that if women in New Orleans disrespected the Union soldiers, they were then to be treated as professional women or prostitutes. So just as the Palestinians are terrorists, Southern men in towns under Union Army jurisdiction were shot or hung on the grounds that they were nothing more than bushwhackers aiding and abetting the Confederacy's resistance. When Union soldiers appeared in the Southern town, the town could expect to be totally looted and burned to the ground. When Lincoln's army appeared on a plantation, the black slave women were mercilessly raped for the failure of the slaves to rise up in revolt, and therefore they were supporting the South's war effort because they stayed there and worked. Lincoln's war against the South was a war of hate. Many Union officers and generals were indoctrinated products of the novel Uncle Tom's Cabin, the publication that demonized the South as a society of slave owners mistreating slaves, as Union soldiers actually did. The Union officers and soldiers in the South that were abolitionists resulted in the worst war crimes in human history. Corrupt historians are busy at work feathering the official narrative and kept buried in the history of the so-called Civil War, but by the invasion of one country by another. Robert said, when he was growing up in the South, we were told that we had made a stand against greed-driven aggression intended for the South to pay for industrialization, via the Morrell Tariff in the North, and therefore would not allow the South to secede as it was its constitutional right to do so. But the statues are being taken down, erasing public reference to the South's resistance to invasion. And that's one of the things they're doing, Eddie, today. That's why they're destroying so many of these Confederate monuments, because the woke civilization and politicians that we have in this country, they don't want the truth to get out. So if you have a statue of General Lee or Bedford Forrest or Thomas Jackson or whoever, President Davis, in your town, the young people might say, well, why is that here? And they would say, well, because they did this, this, and this. But the truth might leak out of why they were fighting for their independence. But if you just destroy the history of the country, and that's what the communists do when they come in, they destroy yes. all of your history and your heritage and say it was all bad, it was terrible. But if you accept communism, it's great, and it's going to take care of everybody. Everybody will be well-fed, and they'll be well-cared for. There'll be no rich and no poor. Everybody will be taken care of. We'll get rid of the rich people and take whatever they have and give it to the members of the Communist Party. So Lincoln was way ahead of his time. He was a communist before it was really
yes,
a worldwide
was.
Organization. We'll finish this up after the break.
We'll be right back, folks. This hour is just about gone. It's just incredible. But, I hope y'all are having as good a time as I am. Be right back, folks.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church. A congregation of God's covenant people, informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ has been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these this means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money, as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you for holding on this with the last segment. Gene was just telling me something about the 48ers. It was really, really interesting, and maybe he can let y'all know about it. And I've just said to him, I heard somebody once say that a communist is a socialist with a gun. But go ahead, Bitterender. Tell us about that. Communists.
There's a book out by Donnie and Ronnie Kennedy that had that book, The South Was Right. And they've written a lot of books in defense of the South. And one of them they wrote was entitled Red Republicans and Lincoln's Marxists. And they talk about, and they give names and footnotes and all the historical information. It's not their opinion of how many of the 48ers came over here after these, in 1848, after these socialist revolutions in Europe failed and they had to get out of the country or be put in jail in Austria, Germany, France, and different countries where they tried these socialist revolutions. And following Karl Marx and Frederick Engels, the Communist Manifesto, and they didn't call it communist back then, they called it socialism, but that's basically what it was. And they were welcomed with open arms in the Lincoln administration. And Karl Marx said he was a great supporter and admirer of Abraham Lincoln, because he said in order for communism to take over a country, you need a very, very strong central government with no division of powers between provinces or states or any smaller areas of the government. It has to be under the control of one central government that then can be controlled by the Communist Party and take over everything in that country. So that's basically what Lincoln was doing. And of course, if you say Lincoln was a communist, all the good Americans, they just go nuts, and whine and cry and call you anti-American and everything else. But they tend to kind of overlook some historical facts of what was going on there. So we would like to finish up our article by Paul Craig Roberts, some of the things that he came up. And this came from a book he was talking about, Walter Brian Sisko's book, War Crimes Against Southern Civilians. And when my friend Dexter up in Canada sent me this article, he said he thought I've already heard this before, but he thought you might enjoy seeing it. I said, yes, I've had that book, Sisko's book, War Crimes Against Southern Civilians. I said that was one of my 3-page books, that it was so bad about what happened to the South, I could only read about 3 pages a night, and then I had to quit reading because I was so mad I was ready to throw the book across the room against the wall or something. I didn't want to hit the TV, so I'd read about 3 pages, slam it shut, and then wait till the next day or a couple of days after I'd cooled off to start reading it again. But if you ever get a chance, if our listeners ever get a chance to read that book, it's called War Crimes Against Southern Civilians. It will really tell you how brutal that war was that was brought down on the Southerners. So, picking up with Paul Craig Roberts' article, when the extraordinary war criminal Abraham Lincoln went to war against the Confederacy, he went to war against the American ideal. It was Lincoln who destroyed the United States that was created by the Founding Fathers as a union of sovereign states. As Lincoln repeated over and over, his war against the South was a war to make the South pay the tariffs necessary to support businesses of the North. Lincoln never said that he went to war to free the slaves, at least not during the war. The Emancipation Proclamation was designed to produce a slave rebellion that would result in Southern troops leaving the front lines and returning to their homes to protect their families. And the proclamation only applied to slaves in areas under Southern control. So if you read the great, 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 as we're told, Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation, it only applies to those states in rebellion against the Union. There were, Delaware, Maryland, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Missouri, 5 states that were basically still in the Union where slavery was legal. And one thing I couldn't understand about it, it did not apply to territory in the South that was occupied by the Union Army. And I never could figure that one out. That seemed to me make the most sense. If the Yankee Army was here, that's where the emancipation would apply. But then I read in another history, said, no, they didn't. They didn't want that. Because if the Union Army came into a section of Tennessee or Arkansas or Georgia or Virginia, wherever, and slavery was still legal, then they could declare that slaves were contraband of war. And the Confiscation Act that was passed by the U.S. Congress in 1862 allowed them to come in and take whatever they wanted from Southerners as confiscation because of them being bad, evil, naughty people that left the great United States and take whatever they wanted. So they'd take the slaves by force from these plantations and make them do all the dirty work that the Yankee soldiers didn't want to do. They had to dig the latrines and clean up after the horses and mules. And here in Nashville, they went out to the plantations around Nashville in Middle Tennessee and grabbed all the slaves, brought them into Nashville, and made them build all the fortifications around Nashville. And they think that about anywhere from 300 to 600 of these slaves died from starvation and disease and poor living conditions. And they just dumped them in a ditch by the railroad tracks. And now they want to make a great national park out of Fort Negley, which is a Yankee fort that they built on the south side of Nashville to keep the Confederates from recapturing Nashville after it fell in February of 1862. But the fort was built by slave labor and at the point of a gun. And so many of them died that they didn't really bother with giving them any kind of decent burial. They just dumped them in a ditch by the railroad tracks that run right close to Fort Negley there, threw a little dirt on them, and that was it. Then they came back and built Greer Stadium baseball field over the top of that. So now they're trying to, you know, say if they can recognize, get some kind of recognition or monument or something to the slaves that died building Fort Negley, the Yankee fort. So anyway, Lincoln's war against the South, anticipated by a century, the Israeli Defense Forces war on the Palestinians. And Paul Craig Roberts said, "I've always thought that the collapse of American morality occurred in the 20th century. But Sisko's book makes it clear that American morality collapsed during the period of 1860 to 1865 and following a decade of Reconstruction, during which everything in the South of value was stolen, destroyed, or ridiculed. The South did not recover from its looting and gratuitous destruction until after World War II. And I can remember that. The Republican government was so hated in the South, even as a little boy. The only election that counted in Tennessee was the Democratic primary. Now, every once in a while, we would have a Republican representative from East Tennessee, but certainly not in Middle Tennessee or West Tennessee. That was very conservative parts of the state. And the Republicans, because of Lincoln and what they'd done during Reconstruction, were still hated in most of the parts, most of the counties in Tennessee.
So then, that too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was in the general election, the Republicans didn't run anybody because they only get votes of their mom and dad, maybe brother and sister, and that was about it. So they couldn't get any others. In fact, usually the Republicans could not get enough signatures to even get on the ballot to run. Forget about the votes in the general election. They couldn't even get on the ballot. He kind of concludes here with some interesting information. Paul Craig Roberts does. When Lee surrendered his starving and barefoot army that the Confederacy could no longer provision, Union General Phil Sheridan wanted to have the surrendering soldiers executed, and he had to be talked out of it by Union General Grant. As soon as the Confederacy was conquered, Washington sent the Union war criminals Sheridan and Tecumseh Sherman out to destroy the Plains Indians. The buffalo herd was slaughtered to deprive the Indians of food, and the Republicans used germ warfare against the starving Indians. It's kind of strange that they claim that, it's strange, isn't it, that historians have to claim the war on behalf of blacks. As soon as it was over, they turned to the destruction of another people of color, the Western Plains Indians. And he concludes by saying,
"Do we lose Gene?" Oh, okay. Well, people, it's like we may have lost Gene, but if it's he might have hit something. But Miss Teenage America, aka Miss Lizzie, will bring him back. But you know, all in a nutshell, what Gene has said with Lincoln's war against the South. With the wars going on right now in Iran, the United States is going as perpetrating for the at the behest of Benjamin Netanyahu. Matter of fact, it's a really good article. Gene was talking about Paul Craig Roberts. He put there's a great article that Paul Craig Roberts published. It says Netanyahu and Trump, the new Hitler Mussolini pact. I think Hitler was a great white man, but that's a great article right there by
Lizzie, save the day for us. We had an incoming call there. We had to get I think it's ahead. The FBI checking up on us that we were, you know, weren't being patriotic Americans here.
Probably, you know, trying to be a good American now.
Yeah.
Well, it looks like we run completely out of time.
We've got some information there this evening. And, you know, February, we might pick up one more February event next time. We'll just preview it. The Confederate submarine, the Hunley,
First submarine to sink an enemy warship was in February of 1864. We might talk about that, how it's built, how it was taken to Charleston, and what happened. So that might be our program for next week.
I could not agree more. And I'd like to also say, closing February out is Resin Week. Please, people, say a prayer for the survivors and the people who perished in Dresden during the firebombing of February 1945. Anyway, people, God willing, same time, same place next week. We'll be back. At, I don't know what the date will be. It'll be, I think, the 7th. But anyway, be here or be square. Good night, everybody. Thank you, Gene.